Dateline, November 1985. In another world, a time to come. What makes a person a good person? What separates kind-hearted humans from the repugnant scumbags of the world? And more importantly, who gets to determine which side of the spectrum each of us occupies at any given moment? If you're into religion, you might point to a deity in response to these questions. But when I ask myself if I'm doing everything I can to side with righteousness, I can't leave the matter up to an invisible authority. On a basic level, I think I'm following the correct path. I love and support my family. I do not inflict violence upon others. I believe in positive reinforcement over negativity and punishment. Even when my children leave their laundry all over the floor and living room couch, and then they complain to us that they have nothing to wear, but it's already 7:34 a.m. on a weekday and they should really already be in school. Sadly, I face my share of imposter syndrome most days, an all-too-common malady in our always-connected internet era. While the nagging urge to doubt my ability to write or perform as well as my peers can bring me sorrow, it really stings when seeing a Samaritan perform benevolent deeds makes me wonder if I'm actually kind or if I'm lying to myself and the world. Video games have gone to great lengths to analyze human morality. In fact, despite what some of our most powerful politicians have asserted, I'd argue that video games as a medium offers players unique means to examine their own behavior in ways that books, movies, and other non-interactive entertainment cannot replicate. When looking at games and moral choices, many recent big-budget titles come to mind where a system specifically tracks your actions on a scale, evaluating your conduct as upstanding or loathsome. All too often, these binary mechanics lead to absurd choices between basic decency or performing a cartoonishly evil act. 40 years ago this month, I sat down with a much-anticipated RPG for home computers, one that demanded players actively examine their tendencies in order to complete the game. I never managed to finish it, but 4 decades later, I still consider Ultima 4: Quest of the Avatar a shining achievement of the genre. Don't let that Roman numeral frighten you. Like the wildly popular Final Fantasy series, Ultima games don't need any foreknowledge of continuity to enjoy the adventure. In fact, Ultima 4 shipped with a small book titled The History of Britannia, which doubles as a manual and a recap of the previous titles. There's a cute moment during the initial minutes where the player character discovers said book in the game, and the narration flatly states, "You read the book of history." Pressing any key to advance the dialogue prompts a second, more urgent message. No, really. Read the Book of History. Ultima 4's entire introduction tiptoes between fantasy and metafiction, casting the player as a regular person troubled by a series of personal crises in our modern world. A random rest under a willow tree leads to their discovery of the history book and an Ankh, another physical pack-in with the game. The protagonist wanders across a Renaissance fair bustling with energy before spotting a secluded wagon just outside of the grounds. They enter as if drawn by unseen forces and meet a fortune teller who welcomes them and volunteers to read the path of your future. The mysterious woman asks the player to answer a series of moral dilemmas. Each question pits two of the game's eight virtues in opposition, forcing players to choose one over the other. Take this example of honesty versus honor. If you have sworn an oath to defend a lord you know to have committed a crime, do you testify against him, or do you refuse to break your vow? This sequence unfolds differently based entirely on your responses, as Ultima 4 uses these choices to determine the nature of the game's lead. Each of these eight virtues correspond to eight character classes. As the player reveals where their preferences lie, the game narrows the questions to force one last choice between two candidates and generates a hero based on your final answer. Other RPGs might let you choose your own career path from a simple menu, but not Ultima 4. Once the cards have fallen into place, the game spawns your character outside of whatever town they call home based on their profession. Druids come from Yew, paladins hang out in Trinzic, mages occupy Moonglow, and so on. If you happen to create a shepherd, you materialize outside the ruins of Magincia on a remote island. This is another quality that makes Ultima 4 unlike most other RPGs, as your choice of character class determines where your quest begins. Now that you have arrived in the Kingdom of Britannia under the rule of Lord British, meeting the king should sit high atop your to-do list. The all-powerful Liege, an alter ego of series creator Richard Garriott, heals your entire party at no cost and raises your levels if you've acquired enough experience points. Should you expire anywhere in his domain, Lord British returns you to life in his throne room. Consider this as an emergency fast travel method if you're stuck somewhere like a remote island lousy with shepherds. Dying does forfeit all unequipped items and anything beyond 200 gold pieces in your pocket, so don't make a habit of riding the Coffin Express back to the castle. Fortunately, Ultima 4 offers a number of alternative methods for traversing the expansive terrain of Britannia. Horses can carry you on their back for expedited treks on land. Ships let you sail across the ocean. And a hot air balloon ignores all barriers as it drifts through the sky. More importantly, a series of warp points, called moon gates, exist just outside the eight major populated areas, offering instantaneous travels to any other gate based on the phases of Britannia's twin moons. They say getting there is half the fun, and when it comes to Ultima 4, I agree. As a kid used to helping my parents navigate during road trips, I loved checking my position using the actual cloth map packed in with the game. I also appreciate the ability to actually see any wandering monsters, rather than stumbling into random encounters as my party marches about. These little touches help breathe life into Britannia in ways that most other open-world RPGs never manage to pull off. Whether by death or by determination, your first visit to Castle Britannia and an audience with Lord British will grant you an overview of your objectives in Ultima 4. In each of the first three installments, the player embarks on a traditional crusade against a great malevolent entity, and defeating the ubervillain brings the game to an end. Yet in Ultima 4, the kingdom prospers with no looming opposition, so the only threat is a spiritual one. As Lord British tells you, "The great evil lords are gone, but our people lack direction and purpose in their lives. A champion of virtue is called for." The titular quest of the Avatar thus requires the players to find and visit eight shrines scattered throughout the kingdom, each dedicated to one of the eight virtues. Through meditation with the proper mantra, while holding a sacred rune, both specific to each virtue, the player receives a fraction of an Ankh en route towards avatarhood. Only after completing this journey can the player enter the Abyss, the final dungeon of Ultima IV, and the resting place of the Codex of Ultimate Wisdom. This may sound like a standard fetch quest seen in any number of video games, but Ultima IV insists players actually commit to the cause in order to acquire and maintain their status as Avatar. Self-sacrifice, generosity, and bravery are demonstrated through simple actions like donating blood, giving money to the poor, and standing your ground in combat. Stealing treasure from ordinary citizens, cheating those who rely upon your honesty, and tormenting innocent creatures will lower your reputation. Ultima IV constantly monitors your exploits, keeps a running score of your faith, and can strip you of your hard-earned accolades should you falter. Of all the mistakes I've made in my time playing video games, nothing hurts as much as reading the message, "Thou hast lost an eighth." In a 2018 interview with Kotaku, Richard Garriott explained why Quest of the Avatar holds players to such high standards. Reading letters from fans of his earlier games, Garriott discovered his audience committed sin after sin in order to achieve victory as fast as possible. Players love to kill all the NPCs in all the towns and steal from all the shops, Garriott said. I realized that in all three Ultimas, I had created games in which the best way to min-max the game was to be unvirtuous. I was not going to allow that ever again. In the early 80s, when Atari games felt too primitive, but the NES did not yet exist, I spent many afternoons playing computer games with friends at their homes. These scattered sessions gave me a crash course in many foundational titles such as Zork and Wizardry, but the Ultima games left the largest impression on my young mind. Even with rudimentary graphics, the characters were little more than stick figures on a monochrome monitor. I found their oddball blend of science fiction and fantasy compelling. My knowledge of the original trilogy fueled my excitement for Ultima IV in 1985. I still remember pointing it out on a shelf of a Manhattan computer store, the only occasion when my father bought me a video game for Hanukkah. I know he intended our Commodore 64 to aid me in my studies, but instead it became my primary gaming machine during this time, with Ultima IV consuming literal years of my life as I attempted to make sense of its freeform structure. The passion I felt for Ultima IV initially soured me on the console RPGs that followed in the years to come. When a friend excitedly showed me Dragon Warrior for NES, I scoffed at its simplicity. Final Fantasy fared better in my eyes, even as it felt practically linear compared to the Go Anywhere Edict of Britannia. 4 decades later, I'm sure the shoe is on the other foot, and Ultima IV looks like cave paintings next to the breadth and depth of modern RPGs. However, I also know its influence remains widespread. Writing for 1UP.com, Jeremy Parrish observed, quote, "Garriott's change in focus from combat to the hero's behavior and interaction with non-player characters inspired a more narrative style in RPGs and a move away from the primordial dungeon crawler." End quote. I don't expect today's open-world games to judge my every move, but I do hope for more than a bare-bones mission to slam evil. Reflecting on Ultima IV, I'm more impressed by how its lessons relate to my conduct as a human being in the real world. Staring at a monitor in the living room of my childhood home, I thought Lord British was talking about becoming an avatar when he told me, quote, "to live a life constantly and forever in the quest to better thyself and the world in which we live," end quote. Reading those simple words in 2025, I believe every one of us needs to take his decree to heart. Britannia may not be real, but the Abyss is. and it's up to us to conquer it. Thank you for listening to this audio version of my latest This Week in Retro column, a Retronauts exclusive for our Patreon supporters. My name is Diamond Fight, and you can find me on the internet by visiting my website, fightclub.me. That's FEITCLUB.ME. Good night.